Well, yes, hello. I'm Melanie Imming. I'm the EU Projects Manager of LIBER. And the title of my talk today is LIBER Working Together Towards World-Class Research. And as Jeanette already told you, we are Europe's largest research library network. We were founded in 1971. So we're turning into some sort of lady. And we are based in The Hague, and I am one of the people who are based in The Hague. We have a team of 8 very international people working on all kinds of LIBER activities. And one of the things we do is we participate in European projects because we see this as part of our work to connect research libraries in Europe. Therefore, what I will be talking about today is how these project activities fit in with the LIBER strategy that Jeanette already talked about. I will tell you a little bit about the current projects that LIBER is involved in, and I will also explain a little bit about the Horizon 2020 program, because all the projects that we are involved in are funded by this program. I will tell you a little bit about how it works, how you can also get involved, because we would love to have more Hungarian partners in our projects. I will tell a little bit about the expectations and also, of course, the benefits of getting involved in European projects. And then I will finish off with some of the project highlights from LIBER's past year. Yes, we represent over 400 libraries in and outside Europe. This is the map of Europe with all our partners. And then I have another map as well, and this is the map of all the LIBER members that are involved in European projects in which we participate in. So many of our members participate in other projects as well, but these are our partners in our projects. And at the moment we are involved in 6 projects. Just 2 months ago we were involved in 9, so this map changes a lot. Whenever we get into new projects, all of a sudden we have more members in. As you can see, nice spread. I would like to have some more members from certain countries that we don't have any project partners in. But hey, that's one of the reasons I'm here. Jeanette explained about our strategic priorities. More high level than my talk, I will really talk about how we actually work every day. But as you can see, we choose the projects that we are involved in based on these strategic priorities, as with all the other LIBER activities we do. So this, these strategic directions are very important for us on a day-to-day working basis. And as you can see, we have the 3 of them in nice colors and some of the projects around them. We only get into project proposals if we feel like they are really to the benefit of our members and if they are really attached to one of these priorities. And as you can see here, still 9 projects, but I have to adjust this slide. I like it so much with all the projects. And then here we have the 3 directions and the 3 steering committees. As you can see, we have 3 projects at the moment in our scholarly communication and research infrastructure area. We have only 1 at the moment in the reshaping the research library, but we're already involved in some proposals. And we also have 2 of them that are in line with our advocacy and communication steering committee. So, what are these projects that I'm talking about? I will talk you through the current 6 ones very, very, very briefly, of course. One of the projects that we are involved in is the open air one. This is one of the infrastructure projects. It's the largest one based on amount of partners and also budgets, because this is a 10 million project. It's the 3rd iteration of a large project, and they are trying to change the from projects to an ERIC in order to be more sustainable. We have a very specific role in this project, because the project is all about making sure there is an infrastructure in place in order to implement the open access policies and also to increase their impact from the European Commission. Lots of activities going on, I won't go into details, but if you look at our specific role, we lead a task which is called the FP7 Post-Grant Open Access Pilot, and we are we basically have a fund of €4 million, which can be used to pay for APCs, article processing charges, because a few years ago it was recognized that while you're still in a project, you have money in order to pay for these things, but most of the publications that come out of these projects are published after the project has finished. So therefore this fund, it really is a pilot. We are trying to gather as much data as possible based on all the requests for funding we get. So one of the outcomes will be a report. And because we thought that this main task of the work package we are involved in was too goals focused, we also managed with the partners who worked on this specific topic to have a go to spend some of the money, some of the €4 million money, to help non-APC publishers, so publishers who don't ask for APCs. I know you can call them gratis, you can call them non-APC based publishers, and especially in this area there are a lot of them, and we thought, you know, if we only spend this money on paying for APCs, we don't help the publishers who don't ask for any money. So we had a round of we asked people to come up with proposals to make sure that their work line is more in line with the open air work line as a publisher, and 11 of those were granted. So we will start this work line within a month. It's 50 partners, as I said, all over Europe, and it's co-led by a Greek-German partnership. Then another infra project is the EUDOT project. EUDOT has built an online platform where you can store your research data. And the data on the platform is open, well, open if possible, of course, closed is if it has to be closed, for instance, medical data and all these kind of specific personal data. It makes it accessible and reusable for researchers, but also citizen scientists, policymakers, members of the public, so basically everyone who wants to use the research. So this is a really sort of practical implementation. How can you make sure that people go to really practice open science? Well, at least we have a platform for you to store your data if you want to. Our role is more diverse in this project than it is in open air. We lead a task on policy and planning for data access. We contribute to the research on environments and requirements by libraries. And we also do a lot of communications activities. Because LIBOR is a network organization, our role usually is dissemination, engagement, networking, etc., etc. It doesn't mean that all our library partners have the same role, of course. So maybe also if I talk about some of the highlights of our projects, it might be a bit engagement, communication, networking focused, but that's because of the nature of the LIBOR Europe office. If you would get involved into a project as a library, you can have a totally different role. So very often we partner up with some of our members and they have a more technical role, and we are more in the dissemination, etc. I'm sorry, it's 33 partners, a large one as well, and this is a Finnish coordinator. Then we have the third infrastructure project, which is the Open Minded project. Open Minded is We have two text and data mining projects. This is the more technical one because they are building an online infrastructure for mining tools. And they also want to provide a place where you can share this data. So as you can see, some of the projects we are involved in are slightly overlapping, but that's just the way it is. The mining tools that OpenMinded is developing will be interoperable. That's a very important, very practical thing we are working on in the project. To make it possible to mine the data with very many different mining tools. And our role is to lead the community engagement, but also the sustainability tasks, which isn't easy, of course. And we play a large role in the support and training activities. And the reason why I'm talking about the interoperability, well, as you can imagine, from all our engagement activities, our workshops, etc., we organize on the topic of text and data mining. Interoperability is one of the key issues. We work together with 16 partners and again a Greek coordinator of this project, so very international. Then we have the most technical project that we are involved in. This is all about federated access. Because remote access to online resources is, as you might know, a strong requirement from users. They're so used to just getting into everything with their Facebook account that they should be able to log in with their existing credentials. And in order to achieve this, we also, talking again about interoperability, we have to make sure that all kinds of user databases are connected. And this is a really interesting project because although it is very, very technical, it's all based on trust. And that's one of the things I like about this one. And what we are trying to do, we want to deliver a design of an integrated cross-discipline AI framework and to increase the uptake of federated access, so hopefully based on our framework. And a lot of key players are in this field are involved in this project. What we are trying to do is to gather contributions to a gap analysis, because what we have found out 1 year in the project is that the situation for libraries is very different than it is, for instance, for institutions, etc., because very often libraries use an IP-based way of identification because of all the requirements from publishers, and it's always very difficult for us to explain that we need this and that we have a system that already works, even though we see the advantages of this new federated access-based model. So very often they ask me, and Melanie, what do libraries think of this? And that's a bit difficult for me to to answer and also to explain what usually is situation in all these libraries. 20 partners in this project. The coordinator is based in the Netherlands, but it is an international organization, Geant. And then we have the not-so-technical sister of OpenMinded, the FutiTDM project, again all about the uptake of text and data mining. Try to improve this, especially for research environments. And as you might know, at the moment, the new copyright regulations have leaked in Brussels. So we're very, very active with FutiTDM because it's very important for us to make sure that the text and data mining chapter is open not only for research environments but also for instance SMEs, etc. So it's very, very it's a hot topic at the moment. And what we are doing in the project, we try to identify, engage and communicate with all the stakeholders. And we're in this project for a year now. It still runs for another year, and we run a series of workshops all about the barriers in the uptake. And in the next year, we will try to come up with all kinds of solutions. A smaller project, only 9 partners, and this is led by an Austrian coordinator. Last but not least, the smallest of our projects, the LEARN project. It raises awareness of research data, research data management and policy institutions. Research data management and policy issues to institutions. Again, we lead the work on dissemination, and we try to engage all the members through the LEARN website and LEARN workshops. And it's led by University College London. Why? Why do we all do all this? Well, that's because we want to help our libraries to produce world-class research. And we think in order to do so, we have to be collaborative, we have to work cross-border, we have to work cross-discipline as well, because I talk a lot about our members and how our members are involved in our projects, but of course, all the other project partners are totally different. Could be institutions, small and medium enterprises, other network organizations as well. And it's great to be able to work with all these other people as well and to learn from each other and to find out that we really talk another language, but then in the end we will all learn from each other and work together. And we do this because we see we are involved in these specific projects because we see that the library work is increasingly data intensive and we want everything to be as open as possible. How can we be in all these projects? Well, that's because they're all funded by the Horizon 2020 program. It's the EC-funded program for research and innovation. And the reason behind this large program is that they want to respond to the economic crisis, to invest in future jobs and growth. They want to address people's concerns about their livelihoods, safety and environment. And they also want to strengthen the European global position in research, innovation and technology. And if you look at all these words, you can just boil it down to 3 very important points: industrial leadership, societal challenges, and excellent science. And excellent science is our main focus, although we sometimes also have projects which fall under the societal challenges. The Horizon 2020 program runs from 2014 to 2020. It's an 80 billion budget program, and there are some very interesting project calls for libraries in the program. And the project calls are the starting point for everything you do in the program, because the first thing you have to do if you want to get into a project is you have to identify interesting upcoming calls for proposals. You can't just come up with your own topics, you have to make sure that whatever you do addresses one of the calls that is already predefined by the European Commission. And in order to do so, you can go to the EU Participants Portal. There's a link there, but it looks like this. And even though you see a login button, that's only for when you're actually going into proposals. You can just go to the website, find all kinds of very interesting information without logging in. And then specifically under the funding opportunities part of the website. And then you find all kinds of lists like this. I just chose a random page. There you can see what kind of calls for proposals there are and what the deadlines are of these calls for proposals. And then if you click on one of those, you will find a summary of what they want to be addressed in this specific proposal and therefore in this specific project. And it's always interesting to see, while writing a proposal, how people start to drift from this original text, because normally it's all in there. Whatever they want, it's all in there, and you just have to make sure that you write a really good proposal based on what this text says. And that's proven to be difficult sometimes. And then, if you find interesting calls, you have to find partners in order to build a consortium, as it is called, to start writing a proposal. And this means ask around. And one of the things you can do is you can contact Libre, you can contact me. But I'm not a project fairy, so I can't get you into any projects. It's hard enough for ourselves to get involved in projects as well. But it's always good, you know, I sort of know what's going on, and it's good for me to know which libraries, which members are interested in getting into projects, because otherwise you will end up with the same member partners over and over again. So please let me know. But no guarantees, I'm sorry. And then you will participate in writing the actual project proposal. What is this project proposal? Well, it's a description of excellence, so you have to explain what is so excellent about your specific proposal, what the impact of your proposal and therefore project will be, and you have to describe all the work that has to be carried out. And this means that all project tasks are described in a description of action, which will turn into your project Bible once you get into the project. I will show you how it looks like in a moment. And all these tasks are divided over different work packages. And out of all the partners that are involved, one of them acts as the project coordinator. But we as LibreOffice never coordinate projects. We chose not to do so. This is part of a project proposal and therefore a project description of action. And as you can see, you have a work package number, work package title. It is predefined, and you do this together with all the other partners while writing this. Who gets X amount of person months to work on the specific tasks in this work package, and therefore how much money you will get. The objectives of the specific work package are in there. All the different tasks are divided among different partners, and in this case we even had subtasks. The good thing about these project proposals is that once you start a project, you know exactly what you have to do. One of the things I don't really like about this is that it's not really agile. So you write a proposal, then you wait until you get the grant, you start working on the proposal. So sometimes it means that you have to do certain very specific tasks that were thought of 5 years earlier. And sometimes it's not really, really relevant. So for instance, newsletters aren't as relevant anymore as they were 5 years ago, and now it's all Twitter combined with blogs or whatever. So that's sometimes a bit challenging. But you have to make sure that everyone knows what is expected of them. And therefore, you can also see lists of deliverables that are specific research project outcomes and the month they have to be delivered in. So it's all predefined. And the budget is as well. You can see here a list of the amount of money people get for the project based on the amount of person months they have to spend on different tasks. You get other direct costs, which usually is a lot of travel budget, but also all kinds of other costs like materials, dissemination materials, videos, all these kind of things for us usually. And you also get 25% overhead over all your costs. But then what is expected of you if you get into a European project? Well, you do get the 25% overhead over all costs, but it does mean you have to report a lot. So you really have to make sure that people who work on the project use some sort of time writing system. This can be as easy as a list in Excel, but still it has to be in place and it has to add up to the numbers you report at the end of the project. You have to keep all invoices, etc., for travels, all these kind of things. Because you can get a financial audit. 5% of the partners are randomly picked for an audit. If the amount of money you receive from the EC is too high, you automatically get an audit as well. And the other thing is, and it might sound a bit silly, but if you are joining a consortium in submitting a proposal, you really commit yourself to doing the work as described in this description of action. And this means you have to have the right people in place who have the time to actually work on this. And this is something that sometimes is proven to be difficult for partners. So while writing the proposal, they think, oh, we'll hire someone to do this specific task. But this person really has to be there and really has to be able to work on this. But the good news is, compared to earlier programs, this Horizon 2020 program is simplified in many, many ways, and I just name a few. For instance, if you're involved in more than one project, you know that there's a single set of rules that applies for every project, so that's easy. It's always 100% funding rate for libraries. There's always a 25% flat rate for overhead, and the reporting process is simplified. You don't have to put all kinds of work packages and all kinds of things you did into the EC portal. It's much easier. And for instance, for me as the project manager of sometimes 9 projects, that's so much better than it used to be. And of course, there are lots and lots of benefits, because it is a great opportunity for cross-border cooperation. I mean, I think it's great to, whenever you have a question, you can think of, oh, I know someone in Portugal who can answer this question for me. Or I know someone from this and this institution in Latvia who knows more about this. Or, hey, wasn't there a report written in this other project that I was involved in? So it really is a great, great opportunity. You get to know your peers, but also others. So it's not only meeting other libraries, but you meet lots of other people as well. And you know, in this way, the project work within LIBER is different from the other LIBER activities we do, because this is really cooperating with all kinds of institutions, companies, etc. And the most important thing is you get funding for things you find are important for your institution. So if you, in the first step of looking into the project proposals, you really only go for the projects you think are really beneficial for your institution or your library, it's great that a few years later you have some actual results and you know what's going on this specific topic in Europe. So you get funding for the people working on the project, you get funding for travel, but all kinds of other direct costs as well. And I'm not the only person who thinks this is a good idea. This is someone we asked at the LIBER conference about participating in EU projects. And she says it enables the collaboration between experts in a variety of countries with various cultures and level of social structures. It promotes the introduction and establishment of upcoming trends in all subject fields in a unified way, and it allows the integration of existing services and tools with new inventions and directions. So this is more from the point of view from someone who does other tasks within these projects than we as the LIBER office do. And also someone else. For me, participating in EU projects means learning from good practice overseas, building international networks that bring together a range of perspectives and expertise, that brings the opportunity to co-develop systems and services. So again, the systems and services are really important here. So to finish off my presentation, I can bring you some highlights from this past year for LIBER. We had more than the list I'm going to show you, but one of the things I really enjoyed personally was the FutureDM series of knowledge cafes. We had knowledge cafes at different institutions, so not only libraries but universities as well, but also with SMEs, with all kind of legal representatives. So very broadly focused series, and we really asked all kinds of people, what do you think are the barriers when it comes to using text and data mining techniques? What do you think are solutions? And very often, you know, the feedback on these cafes was really good, because very often people say, you know, People never ask us this. Sometimes we get a survey, but it's so much better to be able to just talk to each other about these points. And even though we ran this series of cafes in order to learn from them, they always told us that they learned a lot from their peers during the cafes as well. We had a series of workshops to make research data management work from Learn. Because more and more funders are asking for research data management plans whenever they fund something. All of a sudden, all kinds of researchers, projects, institutions need to really work on research data management. But, you know, where do you start? I was involved in a project and we had to come up with one of the research data management plans from Horizon 2020 because that was asked by the European Commission. And I actually saw someone write down, all the interviews will be stored in Excel in Google Docs or Google Drive. And yeah, well, maybe that's not really a research data management plan. So there's still lots of things to do there. So it's great to be able to work on this. And it's all because it's funded by the Horizon 2020 program. We had, this is still a draft. In EUDAT, we worked on the guidelines on open access and restricted data. This work was mainly based on the new GDPR regulation by the EC, which is all about how to use personal data. So very new, a lot of demands. People want to know, you know, what does this really mean for us in practice? And on the one hand, it was a rather high level deliverable, but we also came up with some very practical points for all the different people, the different services that are developed within the EUDAT project. For instance, to change the disclaimer. It's sometimes just as simple as that, to make people aware of what they have to do, make sure that people give the right type of consent whenever you want to store their data, etc. So those kind of tasks are really interesting because it's a combination of, you know, sort of high level and translating this into very practical actions. And that's what we always try to do at Libre. We organized a Green Light for Open Access conference. It was the final conference of the Pasteur for Open Access, a project which has just ended. We invited 150 experts to Amsterdam. And again, this was a very well received conference and it was linked to the Dutch presidency of the European Union. And then some numbers from the FP7 post project pilots. We are now about 574 approved funding requests, as you can see at the end. And as you can see in the beginning, it's rather slow, but very quickly it went up. This is a cumulative picture. And the other thing that we are rather proud of is that we have 11 approved bids for the alternative funding mechanism for APC-free open access journals that I talked to you about. So this was something that wasn't in the actual description of action, but we managed to get it in there. We held a Foster Open Science training during our Libre conference in Helsinki in June, which was very, very well attended. And the other thing was already mentioned is that we developed an online open science training for librarians, which is well received, as you can see here. And it's still available, so. The other thing, we organized our 4 open science cafes at the Dutch Presidency Open Science Conference, which was another specific open access, open science focused conference, beginning of April, again in Amsterdam. We managed to get a slot for 4 cafes, so 4 of our projects all held a science cafe of their own. And this was very, very high level attendees, As you can see here, someone is taking notes. Well, that is a member of the European Parliament. And very well received as well. So it's really, really great to be able to make sure that people know that these projects are going on at such an event, and to also really disseminate the outcomes of the projects there as well. So to round things up, why do I think it would be good to get involved? Well, you can become a member of some of the very large project networks in Europe. So not only do you have a chance to really work on the deliverables that are described in the description of action, but it's much more. You know people from all over Europe you can ask questions to. You can get involved in all kinds of new things because you know these people and you know these networks. You can support open access and open science. You can work on the operability of services, which is a very important element in most of our projects. You can provide training and develop the workforce based on the outcomes of the projects that you work in. And you have a really good opportunity to advocate and engage all kinds of stakeholders together, which is so much easier than on your own. And to round this up, we are working with LIBER on a European project called LEARN. LIBER is offering a lot of services which create an orientation for those institutions that need it. LIBER is like a star we look at. If we need some light, then we can always ask them. Well, after this shameless last slide, the only thing I can tell you, not only from me, but also from the other 8 LIBER staff members, thank you, and well, hopefully we will see you in one of the project's kickoff meetings very, very soon. Thank you.
We are just before the second break of the day, and I invite here from Alexander Street, Krasimira Angelova, for the next presentation.
I have a question on how you measure results. Because I understand all those, I mean, it's absolutely impressive what LIBER is trying to achieve. My question is, it's my 20 years of experience in this market, and what you can see is a human example. Somehow in Berlin, there was suddenly a project which was EU-funded to make a portal on plants. However, there are existing databases where you just can subscribe to. So my question is, what's happening? How do you measure the results of these? And how sustainable are those projects? I mean, I know that you've been yourself in a project in Holland. So after 3 years when the project is finished, what happened then? The reason for asking that is, how competitive are you sometimes to professional people or professional corporates, and how do you see the balance between maybe doing something and after 3 years there's no funding, it's gone, and how sustainable, because that's the new fashion word, right, sustainability. So I just wanted to ask you, if you invest all that money there and after 3 years, what's happening and how do you measure results? Thank you.
Yeah, well, it's working, yeah. I think that's a very, very interesting question, of course. I mean, I can talk for an hour about why not to get involved in projects because they are not sustainable, etc., etc. But I could also talk about for an hour about why you definitely should be involved and how you at least can try to make your project sustainable. Since I was a project manager in a project really based on sustainability of the project, I know quite a lot about this problem, because it is a problem. And for me, the key lies in making sure that whenever you write a proposal, you already think about sustainability. You have to think of how can we make sure that the deliverables we have in the project are to real value to people. For instance, the Pasteur for Array project came with an overview of all open access policies in Europe, And because it was rather well disseminated, people really took on, and it has been proven to be very, very useful already by lots and lots of people in Europe. But you have to make sure that from the project start on, you think about these things and you know how to do it. And one of the things that sometimes happen is that people start, for instance, a stichting that really looks after the things, or one of the project members in advance tells the others, you know, we will make sure that we will make the project sustainable for a longer period of time. I don't always believe them, but that's the reason as well. So it is a very, very, very valid question, and sometimes people don't think about the sustainability as much as I think they should, and then it just... But we think about it a lot, and we try to make sure that we are one step ahead of the problems you can...
Do you check also what is available in the market before...
We try.
Because
yeah.
A project on federated search.
Yeah.
There's Shibboleth, there's Athens in the UK.
But those things are used in the project.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's Shibboleth based. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Based.
Yeah, yeah. For now, not everything. I hope I must be correct, but a lot of the services are. So yes, we try to. You can't always know everything, and it's also a question of choosing the right project and the right consortium as well. So it is difficult, but it's not impossible at all.